and hope down these ancient alleys, born of a time before our sweet follies. Our love was one red room, sweet girl, when suddenly around us was this.
That's St. John's, Newfoundland singer-songwriter Ian Foster with a track entitled Our Love Was from his fabulous new album Sleepy Years, the follow-up to the very well-received The Great Wave from 2014. Now, Sleepy Years is quintessential Ian Foster, great songwriting with perhaps a little more of an indie cinematic feel than some of his early efforts. We caught up with Ian on the road to chat about the new album. How are you doing today, Ian?
I'm doing great, Jan. Thanks for having me on.
Well, great to talk to you. We love the new album. One of the things I love about your music is the fact that there are so many stories wrapped up in these songs.
I completely agree, yeah. I mean, I think that stories are, Thomas King said that, you know, the truth about stories is that they're all that we are. And that's so true, you know. Even stuff that doesn't feel like a story is somehow a story. You know, a love song, any love song you hear on the radio, no matter how pop it is technically a story. It's a story of love lost, you know. Some perhaps are better told than others, but I grew up in Newfoundland is a place of stories anyway. Storytelling is a tradition here, and my father is definitely a story addict. You know, he loves good punchlines. He loves the beginning, middle, and end, and contextualizing things and all that stuff. So I grew up with that, and I guess it's certainly nothing that I set out on purpose to say my music will tell stories, you know, or anything that deliberate. It's just something that has evolved over the course of my life and over the course of songwriting.
Well, I'd like to talk about the album Sleepy Years, but I also want to talk about the song Our Love Was, because anyone who's listened to this interview will realize that's a 6-minute song, and it has actually a really, there's quite a long instrumental portion at the start before you actually start to sing that song. What I love about it, though, and I know you have a strong interest in film, is the fact that this song really does have a cinematic feel. And I wanted to get you to talk about this song, and then let's talk about the album.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's funny because you're right. There is technically a vocal in there, but even in the approach to that vocal, from a production perspective, we sort of did some EQing and things that make it sit back a little bit further in the mix. And that was on purpose, you know. The vocal is there actually as a bookend for the record, you know. It's one of those almost Easter egg things where that particular stanza that I sing, it's only four lines of 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 lyric, and it's actually from the first song on the record, Feels Like It Wants to Rain. And it's just, again, that way to sort of bookend the record thematically. My last record was 3 years ago, and those 3 years have been filled with touring that record, but also doing production work for some other artists in the producer chair, which I've really enjoyed, and also making a film called Keystone, which is a 15-minute dramatic short film. And that came out of scoring some other films. So definitely on both sides of the camera, I guess, you know, or both sides of that world, I've been very interested in film and also making music for film. And it's one of those things that, again, perhaps like in what I just said about stories, it's just kind of come in gradually and in a grassroots way to my music. It was nothing that I decided, okay, this time I'm going to try to meld the film things I've done with the singer-songwriter things I've done. It's one of those things where I had, you know, the record written, but I felt like there needed to be a closing track, and it just seemed, I had this piano riff, you know, and it just seemed obvious that it would be the last song on the record. It seemed obvious that it would be mostly, if not completely, instrumental. And that it just fit, you know, it kind of brought, you know, all the moods of the record to a particular conclusion.
So tell us about Sleepy Years itself. Where does the title come from?
That is a common question. I can't imagine why. I'm just kidding. Obviously, it's perhaps an obtuse title, but it actually is the name of another song of mine that is not on the record. I took a page from my friend Sherman Downey's handbook. He's another Newfoundland singer-songwriter who has been a friend of mine for many years, and I love his music. And he released a record called Honey for Bees a few years ago, and he has a song called Honey for Bees, but that song is not on that record. And it's actually on his follow-up record, which I thought was hilarious. For some reason, that just struck me really funny that he would do that. So maybe I'm just following in his footsteps. But it is the name of another song that I've written, and it seemed, again, you know, maybe it just sounds like I'm a broken record here, but it seemed obvious that this record would be called that. And I guess, obviously, I had formed an idea of what the title Sleeper Years means through writing that other song before I call this record Sleeper Years. But essentially, it's about the years when you are becoming who you are in one way, shape, or form, which can sound very specific. Like, I'm sure a lot of people immediately think about, you know, either your late teens or your early 20s, maybe, as that's often the formative years for a lot of people. But I think it's actually a period of time that you can meet at different points in your life and at multiple points in your life. You know, I'm sure you yourself have at some point recently or in the distant past looked back on a period of your life, whether that was a year or several years, and sort of went, wow, during that period, I just thought I was floundering, or I thought I was doing this other thing, and now that I'm standing where I am, it turns out that was all leading to this, whatever this is, obviously being general here. And I feel like that period is what I'm calling someone's sleeper years.
Does that mean that the songs that you chose to put on this album have that feel to them? I mean, there certainly is some strong issue-based songs on this album. Those songs are on there, but at the same time, you're feeling like, you know, are we sleeping through a time when we should be paying more attention? Is that the issue here?
Yeah, that's a good question. It definitely went the other way around, as in, like, I chose the title after choosing the songs. I always try to choose the songs first. But I was looking for an umbrella title because I felt like these songs do cover quite a broad swath of emotions and stories. You know, I mean, as we'll talk about, I guess my song The Stinging Nettle is about my great uncle in the First World War, and obviously that subject is very different than New Rush for an Old Town, which is somewhat of a political song about a city, you know, in a money boom and the good and the bad that comes from that. So I was sort of trying to find a way to encompass all of that, but I feel like the concept I just described, the idea of sleeper years, kind of does encompass that, because whether it's a city becoming who it is, or a young soldier becoming who he is, or, you know, in a song like Feels Like It Wants to Rain that I know you've played on your show, it's about, again, that sort of anticipation of change and the idea that, as you just alluded to, you know, that we might be sleeping through a period and now waking up to it. You know, it's again a period of our lives. So the hope is that sleeper years as a concept and as a title sort of encompasses all of those different moods and those different stories.
So let's talk a little bit more about Stinging Nettle. We're going to play it in a few moments, but was this a song that you'd been thinking about for a while before it made it onto this album?
The story of Stinging Nettle is that last July I was on tour in Nova Scotia and I was having a conversation with my father over the phone, and he told me that he and his mother had discovered some written family history, and it basically brought up this story of my great uncle William Vigers, who was in the Battle of Beaumont Hamel. Now, that particular battle in the First World War on July 1st, 1916. So if you think about that, it was one of those kind of eerie moments where it was last July I heard this story, literally the centennial of that particular battle. That battle is so important in Newfoundland history. You know, many Newfoundlanders in the regiment went over the top that morning, and only 67 answered the roll call the next day. It was a huge slaughter, to the point where July 1st in Newfoundland is considered Memorial Day, you know, which is always an interesting juxtaposition since it's Canada Day. So to find out that my great uncle was in this battle was quite a revelation. And then my father proceeded to tell me the facts of the song, which I won't repeat right now for the sake of, I guess, spoilers for your listener. You know, it is a folk song, so the details are all quite clear in the order of events. But he told me the whole story, including the ending, which is also true. The ending of the song is the true ending. It's not authorial, whatever, you know. And that was just amazing to me. You know, when he finished telling me the story, particularly the ending, It just immediately felt like a song. Like, clearly this has to be told as a folk song, because it has such a perfect beginning, middle, and end to the story. So I basically sat down right away to write the song and had finished it on that same tour and played it for my folks. And then, you know, it seemed like an obvious contender to go on the new album.
Let's play that just now. This is Ian Foster with the Stinging Nettle from his great new album, Sleepy Years. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
William Vigers lay in the stinging nettles, face turned up to the morning sky. Just above him a storm of fire ripped a hole in the 1st of July. A bullet in his leg, a bullet in his spine, dashed on the rocks and the stones, down a river of lives, St. John's Road and an ocean away from home. For pretty eyes a tear may fall, there are nights without a moon, but from danger comes the sweetest grace, from the nettle comes the bloom. His teenage years, a fever dream, a prelude to the war. A wife some thousand miles away, the heart that he fights for. Now for days he waited in those fields of death for the final blood to flow, but the stinging nettles hid him from the sight of the enemy's killing blow. For pretty eyes a tear may fall, there are nights without a moon, but from danger comes the sweetest grace, from the nettle comes the bloom.
William came home at 21, a bullet still in his spine. For years he lived and loved, yet felt that sting, the bitter sweet taste of time. Oh, and when he died, there was a sign of the life, the hope that he gave. For a stinging nettle grew from the soil they laid upon his grave. For pretty eyes a tear may fall, there are nights without a moon, but from danger comes the sweetest grace, from the nettle comes the bloom.
That's Ian Foster with The Stinging Nettle from his great new album, Sleepy Years. He's our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. I want to talk about the making of the album. Tell us a little bit about the making of Sleepy Years.
Sure. So right from the start, I knew that I wanted to work with my friend Scott Hammond, who is a mix engineer who lives here in Newfoundland. He had just built a brand new studio in St. John's, this beautiful room that he created for mixing records. That was, you know, he built a house essentially and hired someone to design plans for this room to be built into the house as it was built. So, I mean, you can't ask for, it's the dream space. I'm sure you feel the same as someone who records sound, you know, imagine if you could, when you built a house, build a room with that in mind. It just never happens, you know? So he had built this beautiful, new studio here, and Scott has mixed records of mine in the past. He's mixed albums. He mixed The Great Way, for instance, and he's mixed other records that I've produced for artists. So we have a good working relationship, and I wanted to try something a little different this time, or at least different for me, where the mix engineer would be the tracking engineer as well. Many of my favorite records seem to have that, and it's funny how, you know, in this age of lower budgets, you know, that happens more and more. But in the old days, it was often like there's a separate engineer for every step, you know. But at the same time, some of my favorite records, it's the same person. And it makes so much sense if you think about it. You know, the person capturing the sound on day one is going to be the person handling the sound on day, you know, whatever, the end of the process, essentially. So there was a real potential through line of vision and cohesiveness that could come from that. So really, Scott was my brother in arms. You know, he was the first step. You know, he was the guy who was going to record the acoustic bed tracks that became most of the songs on this record. You know, Stinging Nettle, Feels Like It Wants to Rain, You Left a Song, all those songs started day one at the Blue Room. And then we split the duties between his studio and my studio. So you'll notice on this record, there is a lot of sort of soundscape moments, those kind of things, particularly on Our Love Was, but even on Stinging Nettle, there's those, even under the acoustic guitar and the vocals, there are those background sounds that they were all recorded at my studio, and that kind of comes out of the film side of my work, I think, a little bit. So that was sort of the basic sort of setup for how we did the record, and then, of course, we brought in musicians as we needed to play on those particular tracks.
Well, I have to say, I love the soundscapes. Tell me a little bit about who else plays on the album.
Absolutely, yeah. So, excuse me, we'll start with Harmony, I guess. Nancy Hines, who is my singing partner and partner in general, she sung on my last few records, and she sings the most on this record. She is most of the female voice you're hearing is her on the various tracks, though Catherine Allen from The Fortunate Ones sings on Stinging Nettle and Killing Frost, along with Andrew O'Brien on those two songs. And Laura Spink, actually, of Toronto band The Young Novelist, is the harmony on Don't Know What's Good for Us. And then Jerry Stamp also sings on the record, a good friend of mine for many years, and has sung on previous records of mine. Andrew McCarthy and Chris McFarland, who plays drums with Great Big Sea, play drums on a couple of the tracks on the record. Patty Byrne played bass. Adam Press, good friend who's played on many of my records before, plays all the cello. Heather Cow, a phenomenal violin player, plays the violin. Who am I missing? Oh my God, of course, I knew I would forget somebody. And it's funny that I would forget him because it's one of the sweetest moments in a way on the record. I played all of the piano on the record except for one track, and it was played by Brian Way, who is my first piano teacher. When I was 10 years old, he was the one who taught me basically everything I know, as I say, though he would be far more modest, I'm sure, if you asked him. But just a phenomenal player, taught me everything I know, certainly about improvisation, because he's always been big into that. And it's the first time I've ever been able to play with him in that way, and to have him play on one of my songs was a total treat.
Well, it's been great to talk to you about the process. You know, I got to say, one of the great things about our interviews, and I think this is the third or fourth we've had, is it's great to talk to somebody who really, you really clearly put your all into, you know, all of the things you do, whether it's on the road playing shows or whether it's working on an album. And that's great to see. I mean, it's hard to make a living in the music business these days, but it's great when you see somebody that really is working at everything to try and make sure that whatever you produce is as good as it can be.
Well, I think that's key, Jan. I appreciate that, first of all. And I think it's all about the people you surround yourself with, really, you know, and that goes back to talking about the record. I'm just realizing, I'm sorry to jump in here with answering the last question, but Terry Campbell, also a phenomenal trumpet player, played the brass on this record, and Richard Bradley mastered, both killer musicians. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a team effort when it comes to recording an album, for sure. And for me, as a producer, whether it's my own record or other people's, I always look for, you know, I think the part of the job is who to bring into the room and who will bring something special to that record. So, you know, I certainly appreciate the personal compliment, but, you know, I always try to share that with all the musicians who lent their talents to it.
Now, you're on the road a lot of the time. You're going to be heading into Ontario. I think you're also in Nova Scotia a little later. Tell us a little bit about the live show.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's interesting this time. I just finished a month in the United States, and the record officially came out on May 5th, but it meant that I spent a month leading up to that release date playing these songs for, in many cases, strangers. I mean, I've toured in the States a little bit, but I've been touring in Canada for 10 years now, so it's certainly something I certainly see more familiar faces at Canadian shows than, you know, there's some cities I'd never played before in the United States this time around. So it was a really great and daunting and great process to play the songs for strangers and road test them in that way. So because of that, though, I feel like the trial by fire has ended. You know, I'm feeling good about the live show, about these songs, about presenting them to people. So I'm ready to take it through Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick. And this tour ends with a music festival called Roots on the River in Bellows Falls, Vermont, in early June.
So if people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
IanFoster.ca, that's the hub of it all. Of course, I'm on all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, but all those links are on my official website.
That's wonderful. I want to finish with one more track from the album. I'd like to finish with the tribute song for Ron Hynes. I've actually played it on this show before, I think. I've heard you play it live before. It is a fabulous song. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about Ron Hynes and the influence he's had on your career, and tell us a little bit about the song.
Absolutely, yeah. So You Left a Song is one of the older songs from this period, this three-year period since the last record. And, well, it came about two Novembers ago, because that's when Ron Hynes passed away. So the story that is well-known here in Newfoundland, maybe less well-known elsewhere, is that within a half an hour of the news of Ron's passing being made public, all of the power went out in downtown St. John's. It was a lot of homes. And it was one of those things where I can't remember how long it was off for, but a couple of hours. And former bandmates of Ron's from, like, the Wonderful Grand Band and stuff were ready to go on stage at different venues in downtown that night, and they couldn't play because the power went out. My favorite story comes from Fred's Records. our local independent record store. They found out the news, and they put on Crier's Paradise to sort of close the store, you know, 7:30 at night. And all the power went out on Duckworth Street up to and including the building attached to Fred's Records, but not Fred's Records. So, you know, make of that what you will, you know, it was just one of those kind of moments. And for me, I was sitting in my home in downtown St. John's. The power goes out. I get a text from a friend telling me the news. And I was just sitting there in the dark, you know, on my couch, right where I am right now, actually talking to you. You know, one of the few things that doesn't require power in this day and age is acoustic guitars. So I took mine down off the wall and was just sitting there in the dark, strumming the guitar, thinking about Ron. And, you know, it was not, again, it wasn't a deliberate thing. I keep saying that, you know, it's not a very good work mantra where it just sounds like everything happens by chance, you know, perhaps. But it felt a certain degree like that. I started singing some things and humming some things and strumming some things. And eventually that turned into what felt like it might be a song. And then I put the guitar down for hours. And then around 2:30 in the morning, I don't know, I just got up out of bed. I felt like I was called out of bed to finish it, you know. So I finished this particular song 2:30 that morning, the same night that Ron passed away. And I'm often not the type of person to release something out into the world very quickly. You know, I like to let it simmer, you know, even after it's kind of finished, I like to let it sit there cool, I guess, you know, a little bit on the stove. This one, it just felt like it was so much from the heart, and it was so relevant to what everybody, maybe at least I was feeling at the time about Ron's passing, a certain melancholy. And it's also, to me, in the folk tradition, it couldn't be more in the folk tradition to have a song that you wrote about something that just happened and you're trying to express what you feel and maybe what somebody else feels about it. And for a guy who gave us so many great folk songs, it just felt like that was right in line with maybe what he would have felt. So, yeah, you love the song.
That's a great story for a great song and a great tribute to Ron Hines. Ian Foster, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. This is Ian Foster with You Left a Song from the album Sleepy Years. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. And thanks again.
Left a song in the stones of Solomon's Lane, a song at the bar of the rose, a song in the water under bridges you burned, a song for a lifetime that goes. You left a song with the dogs roaming the streets, a song for running out the door. You left a song in the honor of an island in tears, a song on the ocean's floor. So tell me, how did you make them all shine, even in the darkest night? How did you break so many hearts just by turning off the lights? You left a song on the ice, a song in the cards, in the eye of the needle sting, a song in a young man's rambling shoes, a song at the heart of things. You left a song in the rooms of your empty home, a song on a distant shore. You left a song on the step as you were walking away, to show us there could be more. So tell me, how did you make them all shine, even in the darkest night? How did you break so many hearts just by turning off the lights? So tell me, how did you make them all shine, even in the darkest night? How did you break so many hearts just by turning off the lights? Just by turning off the lights.